Dear listener, welcome to the Same Old Wombles podcast. I'm joined today by the amazing Alex Foulkes with some of his teeth and by Adam Proctor, dressed to the nines in his 1988 walkout top. Enjoy the show. We've got a lot to get through today. We're going to be talking about Notts County and Gillingham, what's happening with our defenders, Omar, how good is he and will he be missed? And then we'll do a little bit of a roundup, a little bit of news from the AFC PLC and what else is going on around the club. Enjoy the show. Know your passion's very real. I must say we're all impressed the way the fans approach this test. The days have gone when football clubs live and fly just on fans' love. Davis isn't just a game and tough decisions must be made. I think the one thing I found very pleasing about the Notts County game, I was nervous because obviously the week before, I don't know if anyone has mentioned this, we beat a particular side from Buckinghamshire. And then midweek, we were all there for the draw against Grimsby. And I think at that point, it just felt like there was such a hangover from the Saturday. Everyone was so exhausted, you could tell it everywhere. Like, the players were exhausted, but also the fans. There was like a mental exhaustion following that game. And so I was really pleased that we were able to get back on the road and get that result. And then we have the Notts County game, and then we've got the Gillingham game. And Adam, I mean, like, what a great game.
Yeah, I know. I couldn't believe it. goes from like, I don't know, one Tuesday's terrible to another Tuesday's amazing. So that kind of, yeah, really freaked me out a bit. I was like, oh, brilliant. Yeah, I was so pleased. I don't know why I haven't watched any of the replay stuff actually. So I didn't really catch what happened with the red card, but someone said that was a bit stupid. And that sort of, it was one of those ones where I was like, oh no, is that going to be really bad for us? Because often playing against 10 men, it suddenly, everything goes weird. But it seemed to do us a favour. And yeah, it was really, I loved it.
I admit, I've seen back. I saw the second yellow, which made it a red. Our guy, you know, he went down. I mean, that was a huge pullback on his shirt, so he had no choice. Yeah. But I didn't see the first one. Alex, did you catch the first
yellow? Yeah, it was pretty much the same. I watched one of the pieces I've watched online is the Jules fans podcast thing, and I apologise to them, but I can't remember the name of it. But it's two guys who do a away trip day out type video. But their comment on it was both of those yellow cards were deserved. Both of them were absolutely professional fouls, worthy of a yellow. And yeah, JK went down a bit easily, but he was fouled and he was otherwise through for an attack. It wasn't a red card scenario. A straight red scenario, but it was certainly worthy of a yellow. So they seem to think that the Jules fans who had it in for the referee from then on had got it wrong, that it was a red. Let's not forget that we were already a goal up.
Yeah.
We weren't looking secure, but we were a goal up. So, you know, it wasn't that we only won because of playing against 10 men. I think it was a really solid performance. We missed a couple of chances, well, more than a couple of chances to really put them away. And I think that young Kelly is going to rue being one-on-one with the goalkeeper from now on. But I think, you know, it was a really solid performance. And getting 7 points out of those last three games, that's what I said a week ago we needed in order to maintain the playoff push. I deliberately said it as being 7 points for the next three games rather than any individual result, because let's face it, we all assumed we would beat Grimsby and have a tougher time at Notts County. But, you know, you can't predict anything in this league in terms of individual games. Just look at our performance against Forest Green and Sutton. So, you know, we did what we needed to do. And I think we can feel really happy about it. This is a playoff push that's real. This is a playoff push that I hope we maintain. And let's just put it out there. I reckon we need 6 points from the next three games in order to really continue that push.
And by the way, folks, so this is Alex. This is what he's giving us now. He's giving us his points predictions. It was seven from the last three. It happened. Now we're looking for 6 from the next three. And who have we got? We've got
Hang on a minute, hang on a minute. I'm not saying these are my predictions. I'm saying these are what we need to do in order to maintain the playoff push. I've got the Cheltenham Festival on in the background. Let's face it, if I knew anything about predictions, then I'd be betting on that. Who have we got? We've got Newport at home on Saturday, tomorrow as we're recording this. We've got Crewe away. And then we've got Harrogate at home on Good Friday. I think Crewe away, just like Stockport away, are going to be incredibly difficult to win, or even get a point out of. But you know, if we were to lose both of those games, the Crewe and the Stockport, I wouldn't think that our playoff push is derailed. I think there are other games around there that are more important for maintaining that chance.
Brilliant, excellent. So that's Alex's predictions then, and 6 points from the next three games. Good work. Well, we'll hold you back to it. We'll look back on your predictions after those games and see where we're at. But in the meantime, to be honest with you, when I look at the Crewe game, I think those are sort of games we really up ourselves. We really go for it at those particular things. The Newport game is one that concerns me. They're only 5 points behind us at the moment. They got five goals midweek in their game there, so I think that's going to be a, I think that's going to be a tough game as well.
Yeah, I mean
What do you think?
it's the pack below us is what's stressing me out a bit. Most of them have got a game in hand, and the points are really close. It's like a whole bunch, the way you think this could just flip around at any point. It's kind of one of those tombola-ish kind of, almost like the old, what is it, not old cricket, yeah, almost one of those old kind of spinny things where you're like it could just suddenly all go and suddenly something else, like the old train stations, I guess. So yeah, I mean, I think I keep generally saying is we have to. You know what I'm talking about, Alex.
If anyone can come in and explain what the
Going to find
hell
an
Adam
issue.
is trying to say, but the flippity things that flippy around, sometimes you see them at train stations, it could be some sort of flippity thing. So,
Cricket as well, apparently, but yeah. You've
I
got away
know,
with
I
words,
know,
Adam. Carry on.
I know what I'm thinking about. Anyway, that pack below us. I'm worried about the games in hand. Like you say, any game can go anyway, and then we'll probably be looking back and going, why didn't we win that game? Because that might have made all the difference. But yeah, all I'm thinking now is, stop looking at these prediction machines on the internet, and we just need to win all of our games. That's all I want. I just think just win every single one.
Can I ask this question? I've been watching some of the after match interviews with JJ. Do you get a sense? I got a sense in the last one, he actually looks a lot more serious. Like he's suddenly like, fuck, we're in this, because it's I've always thought he's either looks either utterly depressed, which was most of last season. Or kind of like a little bit, most of the time he's like a cheeky chappy, but he actually looks quite serious, but we're in this, like it's dawning on him. And I'm also interested because, the next big challenge that he's got, and these are real challenges for a manager, he's got arguably two of our best players have returned to full training in Lewis and Johnson, short shorts. And what happens there? Because we've been keeping out, what have we had? Three, four games in a row, four clean sheets in a row. So how does it integrate what you'd argue would be our best defenders back into this squad when, at the moment, Barma, O'Toole, and Brown have been keeping them out, and Bass, obviously.
I think there's two factors at play here. First is, what formation does he want to play? Of course, in the last few games, we've been playing three centre backs and two wing backs. Now, Jack Corrie can play wing back or can play full back, but I don't think Nerfville is going to be suited to a full back role. He wants that freedom to go forward. So he would only really work in a three at the back type scenario. So if you move to two at the back, then you've got the added complication of probably bringing Oggs back as a right back. Of the three centre backs, I think that Barma A is really good as a centre back, very mobile, very, very serious.
Brilliant.
But he's also got that throw, which
Yeah.
we didn't see too much of on Tuesday. It was used much more as a defensive line clearing throw than as an attacking option. But both of
Alex,
those
can I just
things.
come in there? JJ looks like he knows what he wants to use that throw. So
Yeah.
they go, okay, for this particular game against Notts County, that's going to be a really effective weapon. Against Gillingham, where they maybe got taller guys at the back, he's going, then we want to play it more to feet and come back off.
Yeah.
Sorry, carry on. Yeah.
No, absolutely.
No, I was going to say, so now we've got to start looking at the height of all the defenders of the teams we're playing to work out whether it's going to predict whether
Whether he's going
the
to do
throw will
or
be
not.
deployed.
Or it's mobility of defenders.
If you don't think that JJ does that already, then you're
Yeah.
mistaken.
Yeah.
But you know, we've got those three at the back. Balmer, for me, is an incredible weapon, and is in. I think that O'Toole has been immense. He's naturally a defensive midfielder, but he fits in really well at the back. He could either play at the centre back or he could play as a midfielder just in front of those two. Lee Brown has been really good these last few games. He's always the one that worries me slightly, and he's also quite a lot older. Well, maybe not than O'Toole, but he's quite a lot older than the average age of the squad, and maybe could do with a rest once in a while. Of the two you've got coming back, you know, both of them are incredible. Both of them have been fantastic additions to the squad this season. I think the luxury that JJ has is that he doesn't have to bring one of them back straight away. If we were in a different scenario and we had real second and third choice players filling in, then I think that the temptation to rush a player back from injury would be just too great. As it is, he can make sure they're fully fit. He can bring them back in, maybe one at a time, maybe both. I don't know, but you've got that option. You know what I would do for the game tomorrow, the Newport game? I'd bring whichever one of them is in, is fitter, I'd bring back in place of Lee Brown and leave the other two, O'Toole and Balmer, as they are. We have got a run of, I have had a run of games, lots of games in a short period of time. So we've got players who need a rest. I wouldn't rush either Short Shorts or Johnson back. Maybe bring one of them back tomorrow, the other one back, or both of them back for the game afterwards, the Crewe game. Yeah, let's see how it goes. But it's a
That's
luxury to have.
interesting. That's interesting, Alex, because I'd probably be tempted to leave it as it is for now and then have them on the bench and then see about moving people in at that point rather than bringing someone in right now. I can see, and you're probably right, Lee Brown probably could do with the rest. He has been immense. He has genuinely been immense. What a find. I mean, and he stepped into a role that he wasn't brought in to do it and has been brilliant. And his passion and enthusiasm is contagious. I guess what would be interesting to see is if he sticks with a back three, could you see, and for me, it just sounds amazing, a back three of Balmer, Lewis, and Johnson. I mean, just sounds like that just sounds not just as a defense, brilliant defense, but also being able to go up for head as well. Because, Lewis scores, Lewis goes up, gets a corner, gets goals from corners. So that's what it adds. It not just doesn't just give us that defensive solidity, but also gives us some attacking options as well. What do you
Yeah,
think, Ben?
and I think that may well be the defence that we play again away against Crewe.
Yeah.
That's what I'd look at. One final thought. I think if we do move to a back four, only two central defenders, I think that's when Lee Brown drops out. I think he playing on the left-hand side of the back three, he fits in really well. I'm less confident about him as one of two centre backs. And I don't mean to diss him at all. I think he, as you say, he's been immense in these last few games. But yeah, let's see. Let's see what JJ decides to go. I think it's easy to leave it as it is tomorrow and then move to our sort of on paper first choice against Crewe.
I think having options, like just having the option, is like a major thing. And I do think, yeah, Brown, yeah, he's older than the other players. You have to be super fit, etc. So if we rest Brown for a bit, just to make sure that we have all the options, that would probably be one of the only things that I would. But I guess it's what do they call it? A nice headache, isn't it? The managers often talk about. So. Yeah, I mean, I guess some players will be disappointed if they don't get selected, all that kind of stuff. But I mean, to be honest, if you're on the run out of the season like this, I'd be just be happy to be in the changing room. Do you know what I mean?
It is amazing. And now, so on that side of it, we're feeling kind of comfortable. I mean, certainly the four, blank sheets in a row has been amazing. It's going forwards, I think, is going to be the issue, and it remains to be. And I would just love to see Josh Kelly. I would just so love to see if he scores a goal, I'm going to go completely berserk. But I guess the thing is, Omar has now stepped up, and I guess I wouldn't be surprised if he's up for Player of the Year, to be honest with you.
He is
He's
player of the
been,
year. Of course he is.
he's of course, Adam's going to say it, but I think he's been amazing. And then, the goal he scored on Tuesday, sort of like the poacher's goal from the long range shot, he comes in and knocks it in, and then the first goal, which was a great, great placed header. But now it looks like he's been called up to the Lebanon squad. And they're playing a double header against Australia on the 21st and 26th of March. So he's definitely going to miss the Crewe and probably the
Oh,
Harrogate
for
game.
goodness sake.
So unless, my only thought is if the game on the 21st is, and I have a feeling they might both be in Australia. I'm not. They are both in Australia. So if he's, after the 26th, I can't see him flying across the. Literally across the globe and then coming back in for the Harrogate game. So it's we're probably going to miss him both those games. And that's the question is like, what do you do? And obviously if we had Martin Drake here, he'd be saying put in Harry Pearl to replace Omar. But
Well, how can you have the best player in the team replaced by the worst player in the team, as far as I'm concerned? That is the complete wrong swap. Unbelievable. Definitely not.
what would you do, Alex? What would you do?
I would put Josh Davidson in.
Yeah.
I think he's the natural replacement. The question is how many you play up front against Crewe. I think it's a different matter against Harrogate. I think Harrogate are a team that we can score against and we can be more attacking. Crewe, the temptation to play one up front and a 10 behind is pretty strong. So if you want to keep Kelly up front and play somebody who can win headers just behind them, that may be Davison, although he's not 10 out of 10 for winning headers. Maybe Pell. Maybe Pell. It depends what sort of game it is. If it's a sort of tetchy, narky game that Pell will get his yellow card in the first 5 minutes, then obviously that's a worry, because playing against Crewe with 10 men would not be an ideal scenario. But I think if you are looking to win headers and you give him instructions just to win the headers, nod it on to Kelly and let Kelly use his pace, I think that's ideal. I can see the Crewe game being entirely a counter-attacking game, so having pace will be a great advantage. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. As you say, good news at the back, tough news going forward. Maybe we ought to be, I don't know, Concord isn't around anymore, but trying to get Omar back for the
As quick as
Harrogate game,
possible. Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, we'll talk to NASA about their current supersonic planes and see if they can shift one out
If
for
we can
us.
sort something out. I mean, I think this goes back to the problem that we've had for a while now, and I think we all look back on that promotion season with fondness because we had options. I mean, we always had, you had Akinfenwa, Aziz, Lyle Taylor, and Tom Elliott. So that was that we were blessed at that moment, and I think very, very lucky. And we realised we need at least a couple of decent strikers. If we could keep Omar and Davison, and then add in another striker,
It's the pace, that's the thing. It's kind of like you got,
I
yeah,
might
once you
catch
get to
this.
Davison and Pell, it's just their pace is so much slower than what we really need. And so it's kind of like, yeah, if Kelly's up front, then yeah, putting our ball onto him, we don't, yeah, I think when we're on the break and stuff, that's when we get a bit of our advantage. And so if we haven't got anyone with pace, it becomes really problematic. It is what it is, you know. Good job, you know. Congratulations on getting to play in a national team. That's really exciting, but blimmin' heck.
We can't see in the one at the moment that you've got the cardboard cut out of Omar over your shoulder.
No.
It's just there. By the way, listener, I've just got to say that every time we do this podcast, Adam comes dressed to the nines. I mean, he's in his Wimbledon Walker replica top from the 88 Cup final, looking very good, my friend. And with the usual, I'm going to go snood. Snood?
Snood, I think.
Yeah, it is. I can't call it a scarf because it's just not what it is. But looking all the time, resplendent. Okay, all right then, chap. So I just want to do a little bit of a roundup on various bits and bobs. I know you're seeing today that the AFC Wimbledon PLC have got a couple of new bods in. Michelle and Dan, I believe, are the two people. And this isn't Michelle who sits on the board. This is another Michelle. Believe me, there's more than one. And so they've come on. And it's been ratified by the Don's Trust Board. What is our feeling about the AFC Wimbledon PLC? Because my sense is that they have complete control over the running of the football side of things. So, you know, it's them who make decisions around the manager and spends on players and all of that sort of thing. It doesn't necessarily go back to the DTB. The DTB, you know, I guess it is, in a way it should be, delegate certain bits of responsibility. But there is a sense then that you have, I know that there are elected members who sit on that PLC, but then there are also people who are brought in who are not elected members who sit on that PLC. Are we happy enough with that as a thing? I'm just thinking about how removed we all become. You know, there is talk about being removed, that disconnection.
The two new people have been brought in. I think their qualifications look excellent. You've brought Michelle, who's brought in for her HR background. She's worked in football, but her main thing is that she's coming in with a human resources background. Now, obviously, in the recent past, we've had an issue with human resources, and the board have identified that they wanted to, even though I think they got it right in that instance, they've identified that they wanted more expertise to do with human resources. That's great. Dan is a football guy and is a comms person. And I think that's brilliant. I think that if we can improve our communications at all levels, you know, out to the public, out to the media, but also internally to the fans and to the members of the Don's Trust, that's brilliant. So I don't want to question either of those two appointments. In fact, I'm not going to question the way that the board is operating at the moment. In the past, there's been a problem, but I think that the split is right, that you've got the Don's Trust Board, which is wholly elected and which deals with the strategy, the overall strategy and the policies of the club. Now, like it or hate it, each individual decision, they do consult and they do take decisions on things like the overall spending money, looking at policies like no gambling, advertising, so on and so forth. So long as the PLC board accepts those policies and implements them, I think they should have the freedom to run the day-to-day business of the football club. And it shouldn't be for the Don's Trust Board to interfere with that. Obviously, if people have an issue, if you have a question, they can bring it up with the Don's Trust Board members, and the Don's Trust Board members can throw that question to the PLC. But it's for the PLC to sort it out. It's only going to be when there's lots of money involved, not day-to-day cash, but lots of money. So my understanding is that when Ali was sold, that was of sufficient value that the DTB was consulted on that as to whether to go ahead with it. smaller figures, they wouldn't be consulted because it's a football decision. But I think it's working pretty well at the moment. There will be hiccups in the future, but I think that we have recognised and ironed out some of the issues in the past. And the PLC appears to have recognised where they feel that they could be stronger and made the appointments of the non-exec directors accordingly. So, yeah, good on them. All we need to do is make sure that we continue to have the strongest Don's Trust board. Members get active, members get vocal. And if you think there's something that could be addressed, raise it in a polite fashion with the DTB.
No, I was just going to say, I kind of looking at the PLC board, I actually think there's people doing more in terms of that. I don't see that the PLC board does a ton of like stuff that actually is about the operations now, because we've got the MD, we've got the director of football, all those kind of people. They're doing a lot of stuff. Obviously, they need to go to the board when it comes to financing and making those checks. But it kind of looks to me like the board now, the PLC board, is really about financing. So understanding the bigger picture of all of our financing and then making agreements as to whether it can be spent or can't be spent. Because you've got, you know, Ian McNay, Nick Robinson, Michelle, probably even James, they all feel like kind of finance type kind of approaches, know how to run big budget businesses. And then, yeah, the exec directors actually seem like the new ones could be really good, because they're bringing in the equality diversity to that stuff, the comms stuff. They feel a bit more active, actually, in terms of we might see some more change. So actually, I don't know any of the PLC people.
I mean, I'm sure it exists somewhere, but I just don't think it's that obvious. But that organogram of, like, you know, responsibility. So it's Alex, as you say, you know, the Don's Trust Board set the principles of which the organisation works within. So these are the principles that we work within, and every element within the club has to work within that. So the PLC has to work within that framework, which I think is fine. And I think that is a good thing. What's been quite interesting is that our new MD, James Woodruff, has come in, and, you know, there was a piece on the website, but because we've got all these games going on, he's kind of gone a bit under the radar, hasn't he? I mean, like, you know, I know he's coming from Palace, and I'm sure we'll hear a lot more about him over the coming months, but certainly seems different in terms of his style and approach to previous MD. But it's going to be interesting to see where he grows.
Yeah, hopefully we'll see him around like we did before. That would be cool. So, yeah, obviously, yeah, go through the news to find a picture of him so you can spot him if he is wandering around. I mean, I think that it would be... There isn't... I was just flicking through the website trying to try and see who does what. There isn't, like, an org chart. So it'd be quite interesting. It would be quite useful to kind of get the... understand the relationships between all these pieces, because it almost feels to me like the PLC is kind of quite removed in a good way, actually. They're just kind of overall financing stuff. Don's Trust sounds like they're doing good stuff now, generally, in terms of making sure the PLC doesn't do anything random. And then we've got this other layer of the people who are kind of operating the stadium, operating the who they're going to buy and figuring that stuff out. So it actually feels like we've got a really solid corporate structure.
Yeah, but it feels like the Craig Cope and that side of it go through the PLC. And then you'll have the MD, and that will kind of more go up into the
Yeah, what would be interesting is how the relationship between the new MD and the Don's Trust board, and how that starts to come together. You know, because that is where we could find there's the more tricky stuff. You know, if the new managing director thinks we definitely should have some dodgy gambling sponsor all around the stadium, you know, what's the relationship going to happen there?
Well, fortunately, I think we've got ourselves in a position that doesn't happen. And I quite like these. I know for a lot of people, this is the dull side of the football admin thing. But I quite like the fact that these are conversations that we can have because we own the club. And then I'm looking at what's been happening to Torquay recently, because they've gone into admin and they've just had 10 points dropped and they're going through a just horrendous time. I know that their supporters are being very proactive and looking to, I think I'm right in saying they're looking to get by the club. But that's just, they're just going through a hell of a time. And then there's what's going on at Reading, which just seems completely crazy.
Yeah.
So I'm right saying that they're looking at setting up their training ground, and Wickham have been in, asking about buying it. And it just feels like they're, it is that thing about literally owners fleecing whatever they can get out of it.
Well, the thing I was
Is
reading
that.
on that was that their owner, I mean, I haven't been following this really, but their owner seems to have owned a number of football teams that have been destroyed, like actively. And according to one thing I saw, he was trying to buy a Premier League club, and it was deemed that he wasn't fit and proper by the Premier League, but the EFL allowed the purchase to happen. It was a while ago now. And then, yeah, selling the training ground, I think everyone's worried that that sale will then devalue trying to sell Reading to someone else. I mean, this, yeah, I mean, horrendous situation.
I know. It's. I mean, and I think, that there's a lot of people. There's obviously our model does sometimes, spit the fans, but I still think majority of fans are, behind us. And when you're able to, I think if you've got to look at it, when we're able to achieve what we've achieved in our short period of time is, is actually incredible.
I think what splits the fans is when we start losing and
That's the thing. If we
somebody
start
wants
losing games, that's the problem. Don't lose games.
then someone wants loads of money
But
and we don't want loads of money because we know what that means. So yeah.
that's but anyhow, so that's good. This is all happening. And then some other little bits and bobs I'm seeing from Wimbledon sporting history, and I'm hoping that you will know who they are, but they have the wonderful museum beside the shop, and they've got some new stuff that's gone in there. It's an excellent display. It's an amazing exhibition.
I'm going to be there
I think.
Saturday. I've got this another visitor, so I'm taking them round all the way from Japan, and that's a
It is
fact.
awesome. It is awesome. Check that out. And then, but also, I'm finding today that who Mick the Miller. Do you all know who Mick the Miller is?
Well, was
Was who was Mick the Miller?
a greyhound,
Yeah,
one of the greyhound.
he sounds like he was with the craze, but he wasn't. His dog, greyhound, and he ran fast around a track, and a very fast, a very famous dog. And not up there with Lassie, but in that sort of like running order, I guess if you had to name the five, or 10 most famous dogs, he might creep into that in the UK. Anyhow, he's got a mosaic which was at the old Greyhound Stadium, and it's now back at our stadium. So it's now, I think the position it is, as you got the stairs into the main entrance, it's like over the side there of the stairs that lead down towards the staff entrance.
Oh, so it's in the entrance. It's in the entrance
Where
where
we
we're
go, it's not
going.
in that entrance, but it's beside, there's the stairwell, and on the side, on the brick side of the stairwell, which goes down towards where the pub is, the Phoenix. I think it's on the wall. It's on the wall just there. We'll see tomorrow, and I'll be horribly wrong. But that's so. Anyhow, Mick the Miller, and it's been unveiled. It was unveiled an hour ago as we do this. So
No, I'm quite
that's
excited about that. I forgot about that. I was actually quite
there. You
excited.
are. There you are. And it's great. What's brilliant about Wish is they get loads of stuff that's given to them. Someone's given them a load of slides of ex-players, like loads of slides. You know about the old slides, and
Yeah.
they're now looking about how you can transfer those, get them on, digitalized, and
Oh,
they've been asking for a
that's pretty
slide projector.
straightforward.
So if people have got, there you
Yeah,
are, Adam knows.
I can
I'll
sort
put you
some
in
out.
touch. But
Yeah.
they're looking for a slide projector as well.
We
Adam
got
knows
those. We
someone
got
has a
those.
slide projector. Have you got
We
one?
yeah.
Oh man, I'll tell you what, Adam, you are the man. You've helped out Wish already. And the other thing which is great is that, through Wish, and there's something called the Wimbledon Old Players Association, WOPA. And it was managed by the most, I still can't believe he's gone, most beautiful man, Mick Pugh. And now Ray Armfield is looking after it. I can't think of a better man. And they have now great players. They invite great players along to it. So Kevin Gage was down at Plough Lane on Tuesday. And for those who don't remember, he was just like this amazing right back, if I remember rightly, who was like he's the youngest ever Wimbledon player. I think he was just over 16 years when he got into the first team, and he scored the quickest goal for us within 10 seconds against Gillingham back in, I believe, 80, so early 80s. But yeah, so it's great through those people they go through. And also, if you do a little bit of a Google search, there is a GoFundMe thing for McPugh. He's doing, he's got a charity thing up and running. So you want to, celebrate his name and everything like that, do donate to it because it's brilliant. We'll find the link, we'll put it in our up on our socials. But there you are, chaps. So it's all go. It's all go with our AFC, you Super Wombles. Come on, you Dons. Thank you very much to Alex. Thank you very much to Adam. We are the same old Wombles.